Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
The General Assembly gets underway next week, and we're previewing the session this morning, and we will be over the next few days. This morning, it's Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole joining us. Mark, good to have you here this morning. Good morning.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
How many years now is this for you, making the trek to Richmond?
Starting my 14th year, I believe, or 15th year.
So, wow, that's a lot. Who was the first governor you started
under?
Well,
I started with Gilmore. Of course, he was only governor for, you know, a couple of days, and then Mark Warner was inaugurated. So, you know, it was 2002 when I got elected.
I guess this time of year, you've got the cold weather, and it's become a habit now that you start making the trip back and forth from Richmond.
Yeah, you know it's a joke. You know, we winter in Richmond instead of in Florida, but I'm looking forward to the session getting going next week. We've got some big issues we're going to be dealing with, the state budget. We have to come up with a state budget, and thankfully Republicans managed to hang on to the Senate in this last year's election, so I'm hopeful that we will be able to get a budget done on time or close to it. Then there's, of course, all these other issues that we'll deal with, you know, ranging from guns to Medicaid expansion and so forth.
Well, let's start off with the budget. It's something that you deal with every 2 years, and it's probably worth remembering that 2 years ago you almost didn't pass a budget. Yep. It really was a state senator, a Democratic state senator, who decided to resign ended up getting a budget.
There's no doubt in my mind that because back 2 years ago, the Democrats controlled the state Senate while Republicans had the House. We'd passed a budget in the House, but the Democrats were holding it hostage over Medicaid expansion. And with the support of the governor, Terry McAuliffe, they were holding the budget hostage on Medicaid expansion. And we were heading, you know, for the first government shutdown in Virginia history. And I really think the Democrat leadership in Virginia wanted a government shutdown because they saw that it hurt Republicans when Washington had their government shut down a couple of years ago, and they were hoping to be able to use it for a political advantage. Thankfully, the last conservative Democrat in the state Senate, Senator Puckett, I think he had his full fill of it, and he resigned, which shifted the control back to the Republicans, and we managed to pass a budget at the last minute to avoid a state government shutdown.
And then in the past, in November's elections, the Republican majority held up.
Yes, it's a slim majority, 21-19. But the Republicans did, despite the best efforts of Governor McAuliffe bringing in all kinds of out-of-state money to try to take control of the Senate, we managed to hang on to it.
Medicaid expansion is going to be an issue again this year. Has anything changed with that?
Not really. We've looked at it many times in the last couple of years, and we just don't have the money to be able to afford it. Everybody talks about all this free federal money, but it only pays for a portion of the expansion. And Medicaid has already been growing by leaps and bounds every year without expansion, and partially because of the sad state of the economy, we just don't have the funds to afford to expand this program. And we're talking about Medicaid, which is a joint federal and state program to provide health care for the poor, not Medicare, which is a federal program for senior citizens and retirees.
The Democrats will, I'm sure, this session, as they have the last few, tell a lot of stories about who this will help and in that kind of thing. But again, like you say, it comes down to money and what the state can't afford.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if Democrats had their way, they would double our taxes double the budget to spend on all these the social welfare programs that have been shown to be demonstrated to be ineffective. What we need to do is back off from those and actually have a smaller government. Less burdens, less regulations on the private sector so that the economy can really start rolling and start producing jobs, because the best anti-poverty program is a job.
As I understand it, the governor's proposed budget that came out in December, which included some pay raises and a lot of different things, pay raises for state workers and teachers and such. But a lot of his budget is tied to the fact that the General Assembly will pass Medicaid expansion, and that seems unlikely.
Yeah, it is. It's not going to pass. And what the governor did is, I think he's playing politics with the budget, is he assumed a whole lot of extra federal money because of Medicaid expansion in his budget. So he's giving out, being Santa Claus and giving out candy based on that extra federal money, like things for raises and tax cuts for businesses and things, which may in and of themselves be good, and we might be able to do some of that, but his numbers, his budget numbers, just don't add up, because Medicaid is not going to be expanded.
So I would guess that's going to be is going to be a fight with the administration then through much of this session.
Yeah, and I'm confident that the House and Senate will work together to deliver a budget, at the end of session to the governor, and I expect then the governor will make amendments and changes to that budget, and we'll look at those. But again, I think Medicaid expansion is dead.
You've had now a couple of years to see what some other states that have accepted Medicaid expansion are dealing with. Yeah. Are they experiencing some issues?
Yes, they are. They are experiencing budget issues. You can read about it in different newspapers and things. And what they're finding is that when they expand Medicaid, the number of applicants or participants in the Medicaid program exceeds what they were projecting. And therefore, that costs the state a lot more money than what they were projecting, and it's putting a lot of stress on the budgets. I mean, when have you ever known a government program to come in under budget? It's extremely rare. Normally, they end up costing 2, 3, 4 times what they were projected to cost, and that's true with Medicaid expansion.
And it's been true. We've seen that with Obamacare
in a lot of
situations, and this is one of the outgrowths of that. It's got to make you feel good that over the past couple of years, I mean, this was an issue that the governor championed and campaigned and tried to, like you said, pick up seats in the Senate and in the House. In the House, the Republican majority continues to increase.
Yeah. No, we've got a solid majority in the House. The Senate was always where the issue was, and fortunately, we had some good Senate candidates running this time around, and we managed to hang on to all our seats, despite, the best efforts of the governor and bringing in tons of out-of-state money to try to swing the Senate to the Democrats.
Guns are a big issue nationally, and there are a number of gun issues in the state. We'll talk about that when we come back with Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole. More on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole here. He represents the 88th District. That is Spotsylvania and Fauquier?
Spotsylvania, part of the city of Fredericksburg, part of Stafford, and part of Fauquier.
That's right, New Stafford. I'd forgotten that. Yeah. What part of the city do you have?
About two-thirds of the city, mainly the out in the Central Park area and those areas there. So.
So your district has always been Spotsylvania and
Stafford and Fauquier. And then during the last redistricting 5 years ago, I picked up about two-thirds of the city.
Speaking of redistricting, we keep hearing all kinds of talk about changes in redistricting, and you always hear about nonpartisan redistricting, which I don't know.
Yeah.
Could ever be done.
No, there's really no such thing as nonpartisan redistricting, because even the states that have adopted these supposedly independent redistrictings committees and commissions, where the politics comes into play then is who gets appointed to the committees and commissions. And really, I mean, you can't take politics out of it. Because it's a political system.
Yeah.
What we try to do is try to be as fair as possible, make sure that we honor the one person, one vote, and make sure we comply with all the state and federal laws and regulations regarding it. And again, try to be as fair as possible to the voters in that process.
The guns and the president today is going to come out with some executive action on guns, and there have been guns have been an issue in the state where both the governor and the attorney general have issued some things and changed some things. A couple of things. Will the General Assembly take up some of the actions that have been taken by the governor and the attorney general?
Yeah, there's already been a bill filed to the issue right now is that right now the state has a concealed carry law. It's been on the book probably for 20 years or so. I think it was passed back in the 90s when the Democrats were in control of the legislature. And part of that is the issue right now is reciprocity. Does Virginia recognize the permits issued in other states? And Virginia used to recognize a majority of other state permits until recently when the Attorney General issued an opinion that a large number of states, I think it was 25 states, that their permits are not up to standard and mm-hmm. Virginia will no longer recognize them. I think this is just a political move on the part of the governor and Mark Herring. Attorney General Mark Herring to kind of throw a bone to the Democrat rabid anti-gun base. We haven't had any issues that I'm aware of in the state with crimes being committed by out-of-state permit holders. The previous system was working just fine. The problem with the law is that reciprocity or recognizing other state permits in the law is set up as an administrative action with the state police and attorney general. And what we need to do is, since we have an attorney general who is more interested in playing politics than equitably enforcing the law, we need to take it out of his hands and make it a legislative issue. And there is legislation to do that. I think it's House Bill 12. I'm co-sponsoring it right now to recognize out-of-state permits. And I think it's the right thing to do. Again, we haven't had any issue that I'm aware of with out-of-state permit holders coming into Virginia and committing crimes. And so there's no need for the Attorney General's action. It's just a political stunt.
And as I understand it, if North Carolina is one of the areas.
There are several surrounding states, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, that are on the list to be to no longer be recognized. And the problem for Virginia permit holders is usually if a state refuses to recognize another state's permit, then that state will follow suit and refuse to recognize Virginia's permit. So, all the permit holders, like me, I used to be able to go to Kentucky family in Kentucky mm-hmm. and visit family. And my Virginia permit was recognized by Kentucky since if Virginia drops Kentucky's recognition of Kentucky's permit, chances are Kentucky will no longer recognize Virginia's permit. So permit holders need to beware if we aren't successful in overturning this action by the Attorney General, because their permits could be valid in a lot less states.
And I've heard situations of where people who are in the military, like down mm-hmm. in North Carolina at Camp Lejeune or elsewhere, run into that of
yeah.
coming back home
yeah.
and all of a sudden
yeah.
you can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's kind of always been true. Maryland has never recognized Virginia permits, and you know, other states like New Jersey even have stricter laws where, you know, people have gotten in trouble for having hollow point bullets, something that's legal in most states, mm-hmm. but not in New Jersey, having a hollow point bullet in their car and getting arrested for it. So if you're traveling and you're carrying, you need to do due diligence and contact the states that you'll be traveling through to make sure you don't inadvertently run afoul of their laws and become a criminal.
Wow. Boy, I didn't realize that's something you do have to stay on top of, because unknowingly you can get yourself in trouble.
Yep, yep.
The other one was, and I think this was an executive action by the governor, where you can't take firearms into state buildings.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, I think, mainly going to affect state employees who are concealed carry permit holders. And he is trying to make that his executive order permanent via regulation. I mean, he would never get anything like that passed in the General Assembly, but he is trying to embed it into the regulations, and there's currently a proposed regulation that's out for comment. So anybody who's concerned about that, I would recommend you get on the internet and submit a comment for the Virginia regulations.
And I think that comment period is open until the end of the month.
I think it is open until, I believe, January 27th.
That's what I think.
I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to, you know, I would encourage anybody who's interested to check on it themselves to verify that. Don't just take my word for it.
But whether it's the president, whether it's the governor with some executive actions, or the attorney general with opinions, I don't remember hearing this kind of action being taken to the extent that it seems to have become.
Yeah, you know, it seems like whether it's the president or even now our governor and attorney general, you know, they're trying to expand their power base and basically kind of rule by decree rather than legislation. I know President Obama, you know, he can't get most of what he wants to do through the Congress, so he just decides to start issuing executive orders. And I'm afraid that our governor is following in his footsteps.
Now, it seemed that with a lot of issues over the years, you always used to hear in the General Assembly that issues take time, and it just – you just year after year would try different approaches, and if it didn't pass, then you moved on. But you don't see that as much anymore.
Yeah.
You see things like this.
Yeah. No, they're trying to get around the legislative process. And, you know, our founders were pretty smart people. They set things up the way they did for a reason, so that no one branch of the government could become all-powerful. And also, they designed, you know, the legislative process to be deliberative. That is, sometimes it moves rather slowly, mm-hmm. but it's supposed to be deliberative to give everybody a time to examine what's proposed and the possible consequences of it. And again, we're seeing executives, whether it's the president or the governor or attorney general, who are just trying to figure out any way they can to get around that process.
I often wonder too with some of these gun regulations in some parts of Virginia, especially the rural areas, the western part of the state. You wonder that this can't be looked upon favorably by Republicans or Democrats.
I mean, there are a lot of especially in the rural areas, Democrats who are pro-gun. It's just unfortunate that none of them appear to be in Richmond or Washington right now. But it has raised a lot of concerns. I'm hearing a lot from my constituents about it, who are concerned about it, and we're doing everything we can to try to overturn the Attorney General's decision.
And like you said, if on any of these issues, whether you support it or you're opposed to it, it's a good idea. Let legislators know. Let the governor's office know, and the Attorney General's office know.
Yeah, people need to be aware who the representatives are at each level of government, local, state, and federal, and try to start a rapport with them, letting them know where you stand on the issues and what you think about their actions.
Delegate Mark Cole here from the 88th House District. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about guns and then move on to some other issues before the General Assembly. We're previewing the General Assembly. It begins next Wednesday in Richmond. More on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA coming up on 830.
Okay, listen, we got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole here this morning as we preview the General Assembly session coming up. Before we get off of guns, you've got a couple of things. One is just the definition of the right to carry arms.
Yeah. Currently, the right to bear arms based on the Second Amendment and also the Virginia Constitution, they're kind of tied to the need for a militia. And while the courts have maintained in court rulings that is not a militia right, it's an individual right. An individual right to keep and bear arms. That is based on court decisions. The most recent one was decided by a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court.
So that could change.
So it could change. And so what I've done is put in legislation in Virginia, a bill to define the right to keep and bear arms as an individual right, not tied to membership in the militia, just so that if a court ever decides to change their interpretation of the Second Amendment, that the law will still be that, you know, it's an individual right in Virginia. It doesn't really change the current status of the law. It just codifies the current court interpretations and puts it into the Virginia Code.
And again, it's for an individual. And not
an individual right, regardless of whether or not you're a member of a militia.
If these kind of issues are important to you, to a person, I mean, these are the kind of things, it's becoming very apparent, either side that you're on, that you want to quiz whoever candidates are and vote accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because these we see more and more, both on the state level and the national level.
Yeah. Government, just seems to be expanding more and more every year, expanding their reach and trying to micromanage people's lives, people's businesses for them. And, we just don't need it. We need to start standing up and saying, no, you need to start doing less, not more.
You've talked about that over the years, and I mean, we've talked about this over the years since when you first went to the General Assembly. You've got to even be surprised though at some of the changes in just the reach of government.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's gone way beyond what it should be. Government now is micromanaging almost every aspect of our lives. And I think it tends to suppress innovation. It hurts the economy. All these cost of regulations are killing jobs and killing businesses. And we got to just start peeling it back. It's gotten to the point where, you can't hardly do anything without getting permission from some agency in Washington. and not just in Richmond, but in Washington, like, you know, just to, I don't know, a simple road project. Say you want to expand a road or something, you know, it takes almost a decade to go from the concept to actually, you know, turning dirt and pouring pavement. And a good chunk of that is because you not only do you have to go through Richmond, but you have to go through Washington. You got to go through the Army Corps of Engineers. You got to go through the EPA and federal highways. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I don't care how much money you throw at transportation when you have such a cumbersome bureaucracy. And again, I'm not just talking about Richmond. A lot of it we had to go to Washington to get permission to do. When you have such a cumbersome bureaucracy, you're never going to solve the problem. You're never going to get ahead of the game.
Well, we've seen that in a way at the Falmouth intersection.
Yes.
It finally got taken care of. It's much, much better. Yep. But how many years did we sit there and talk about it?
Yeah, it's probably been talked about for 20 years before they finally got something done. And, you know, we've got to try to reduce the bureaucracy and streamline the processes so that we can, you know, address the legitimate functions of government more quickly and more efficiently. And then just not try to expect government to micromanage every aspect of people's lives.
Before we get off of guns, I know there's one other. You've got a bill that would allow – that deals with schools and teachers that have gun training.
Yeah, and see, my concern here is, you know, currently the current state of law is the only people who can lawfully carry a weapon on school grounds in Virginia are law enforcement, sworn active law enforcement officers. And you know that's well and good, but the problem is that most schools, a lot of schools don't have a law enforcement officer assigned to them for security purposes. I'm scared to death that sooner or later we're going to have another mass shooting at the schools. Most mass shootings happen at gun-free zones. Mm-hmm. And schools are basically gun-free zones. In the past, I've put forward legislation to require that a deputy or a police officer be assigned to every school. That hasn't passed because of the cost. And so what I've also done is trying to allow school boards to have additional authority. It's not a state mandate or anything. It would be local option that if they hire somebody who used to be a law enforcement officer and they retired or quit to take a job at the school and they were in good standing, you know, you can't – not somebody who was fired, but somebody who had the law enforcement training – that the school board could authorize them if they wanted to be able to carry on school grounds. And that would allow school boards, you know, they hire school security officers who are not deputized officers, but they're there basically as hall monitors and to check, you know, security and things like that, but they're currently unarmed. That would allow schools, if they wanted to hire former law enforcement officers and then authorize them to carry weapons if the school board desired to do that.
Yeah, like you said, it's not a mandate. It's something that the school board could decide this is what they want.
That's correct.
But you're right. It's an issue out there because around here, they're in elementary schools. I know that the sheriff's department will have patrols that will go by and stop and see, but you don't have anybody there per se.
That's correct. Most high schools and middle schools have assigned deputies. You know, they're called school resource officers.
Yeah.
But most elementary schools do not, and that's something that we've got to fix. I'm afraid we're going to end up having another mass shooting at one of these schools. And, regardless of what you do, we are taking actions to give grants out to allow schools to improve their physical security, you know, as far as having locked doors and buzzers to buzz people in. But, a few years ago when they had the tragedy up in Connecticut where they had an attack at an elementary school, they had all those physical security measures. They had a door buzzer. They wouldn't let the guy in. So he broke in a window and then came in and killed 26 kids and adults. And, the best defense against a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Or you run into the situation of what happened at – could have happened at Riverbend.
Yep.
This fall, and at Burke Point, there was a similar thing. So, unfortunately, it's everywhere, and it's on our doorstep. Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole here this morning on Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFEA. You're chairman of Privileges and Elections. Anything new coming up in that committee?
I don't think there'll be anything really new. That's a committee deals with election and campaign finance laws and also constitutional amendments. I think it'll be pretty much, kind of a standard year in Privileges and Elections. I'm not aware of any major initiatives, though I do expect, I just want to comment on this. You remember back in the 70s, the Equal Rights Amendment?
Yeah.
That was, an amendment to the federal constitution, the U.S. Constitution, that was submitted to the states.
And it needed a number of states.
Yeah. And what happened was the Congress put a deadline on it when they submitted it to the states. And it's the only amendment Congress has done that way. It became controversial because of issues, about bathrooms and so forth, and also religious liberty and things like that. So, what looked like it was going to get ratified, and then the issues arose about the language. And Congress extended the deadline, and one time they added 3 years to it, and then they chose not to extend the deadline, and so it expired in 1982. And we even have an attorney general opinion from, I think, 1993 that says, yes, it has expired and can no longer lawfully be considered by the states. And but that hasn't stopped a group of activists from trying to resurrect it and get Virginia to ratify it anyways, even though we have no authority to do so. What they need to do is redirect their action to Congress and have Congress resubmit the amendment to the states for ratification. But I expect that they'll submit that again and try to get it through. But again, it has expired and has no legal weight. The amendment is no longer before the states for consideration.
For the last few years, you've been you've been kind of in the front and center with the whole voter ID situation. I guess some of that is still with the courts. Some of it has been upheld.
Yes. Yeah. It's there is an active court case going on with it. But I'm confident that that Virginia's law will withstand legal's challenge. When it was passed a few years ago, we made sure it complied with all the federal court decisions on it. And I think it's something that's reasonable, and vast majority of voters, even Republicans or Democrats, support voter ID. I think it's a reasonable precaution against voter fraud. And does not discriminate against anyone, because you can get a free ID. If you do not have an ID, you can get a free ID when you register to vote, issued by the local registrar's office. So there is no reason not to have voter ID. I think it's a reasonable measure to prevent voter fraud.
Yeah, if you're getting a free ID, what's the problem?
Yeah, I know it. There should not be any issue, but... Again, mainly Democrats. They don't want any kind of voter fraud or voter security laws. They don't want voter ID. And I think it's because some groups within the Democrat Party just want to be able to cheat.
That's unfortunate. I mean, sometimes even in returning things, I've returned things after Christmas and they require a photo ID.
Yeah. It is not a novel concept. And again, it is not a burden. Like I said, if you don't have an ID, any government-issued ID with a photo on it will work.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a driver's license or military ID or anything like that, then you can, whenever you register to vote, you used to get a voter card, yes. You know, that told what your precinct is on. Now you get one similar to that that has your picture on it. So there's really no reason not to allow voter ID.
And we've had this past year was the first year that you had to. And I don't recall there was any problem at the old polls.
There were no problems or issues with it. I think we've had it for two elections now. And again, I'm not aware of any problems or issues or anyone who was denied their right to vote because they didn't have an ID. Matter of fact, if you forget your ID, you can still go and vote. Just you'll vote provisional ballot, and then you can show your ID, within a few days after the election to the registrar, and then your vote will be counted.
Yeah. Now, the last couple of years, State Board of Elections has come out with all kinds of stories that we've run before the elections of remember to take this to the polls.
Yeah.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole here from the 88th District. We'll wrap it up when we come back this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The General Assembly starts next Wednesday.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Spotsylvania Delegate Mark Cole here this morning as we preview the General Assembly session. It begins on Wednesday, and because you're doing the budget, it's a long session.
Yeah.
This year you go through early March.
Yep. Go through a 60-day session. Every other year, it's a 60-day session, and every other year, it's a 45-day session because we do two-year budgeting in the state. So the budget we adopt this year will run for 2 years starting 1 July. Our fiscal year starts in 1 July. It'll run for 2 years, and then next year when we meet, we'll just be making amendments to the budget based on actual tax collections and revenues, either making cuts or whatever changes may be appropriate to the budget, but and I think it's a good policy to have do 2 year budgeting instead of having to have a huge budget fight every year.
Every year, yeah. Well, in the past few years, you've been you're now assistant county administrator in Spotsylvania. Does that give you a different perspective?
Yeah, it does. Because so much of what state government does flows down and impacts local government. So it was kind of eye-opening to actually serve in local government and see the impacts of decisions that are made in Richmond, how they impact local governments. And I'd had a little bit of that before when I was on the Board of Supervisors years ago. But like Medicaid expansion is a perfect example of it. One of the impacts that people don't think about is social services caseworkers. If you expand Medicaid, local governments are going to have to hire more social services caseworkers to be able to handle the expanded applicants and the expanded recipients of that. And so that's kind of one of those hidden expenses that doesn't necessarily get considered unless somebody jumps up and waves a red flag and says, hey, wait a minute, you're doing this could be an unfunded mandate on local government because they're going to end up having to hire more caseworkers to handle the increased workload.
Well, and as tight as local budgets are now, you don't have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah.
It would have a huge impact. It's interesting. Sometimes I'll see you watching the House and Senate in Richmond. The floor sessions are you can watch on the internet.
Yeah.
So I'll sometimes spend an afternoon watching the General Assembly and see you, and then at night you're back in Spotsylvania on meeting nights often, carrying on your role in Spotsylvania.
Yeah. Well, it's close enough so that. Most of the time we can drive back and forth. It's only about an hour or so to get down there, depending on the traffic. And so it's not a bad commute, not nearly as bad as having to go north to work. I'm used to commuting. I used to commute to Dahlgren for 27 years, every day working out there. So it's something I think that's worthwhile and worth doing.
Real quick, transportation. I know one of the issues that we hear a lot around here is the hot lanes.
Yeah.
They're right now up
yeah.
in North Stafford and talk of moving that further south.
Now, and VDOT is going to move it south another mile or two to try to relieve some of the bottleneck congestion where the lanes end there at 610 and North Stafford. But really, that's kind of just a Band-Aid. I mean, it will help, but... the real, I think, solution is to extend the lanes all the way down to Spotsylvania. And I'm going to be pushing VDOT to try to do that. When the hot lanes were originally proposed, they were talking about extending them all the way down to Spotsylvania. And whenever the final deal was negotiated, for some reason that got dropped. And we need to pick that back up because, you know, otherwise you're just going to create another bottleneck wherever those lanes end. And so what you need to do is get them past Fredericksburg and into Spotsylvania so that you can have a smooth transition when they actually do end.
If someone wants to get in touch with you and contact your office and let you know how they feel, what's the best way to do that?
You can email me at delegate@marklcole.com. Don't forget the L in the middle of Mark Cole. Or you can call. My local number is 540-786-3402.
786-3402, delegate@marklcole.com. And you've mentioned a lot of these issues today and have said several times just about it's important to let your representatives know.
Yeah, I get a lot of emails and I try to answer each and every one of them. Sometimes when we get flooded, because, you know, especially during session, we'll get hundreds of emails a day, and sometimes it takes a while to wade through all of them, but I do try to get back to and respond to them.
Well, it'll be an interesting session, as we've talked about this, whether it's the budget or guns or a lot of this. It's going to be an interesting session once you get it started.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, Mark. Safe travels as you go up and down the road. We'll talk to you after the General Assembly session.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Delegate Mark Cole from the 88th District. It includes parts of Spotsylvania, Fauquier, and Stafford, and the city. That's it for Town Talk. Senator Bryce Reeves here tomorrow. See you then.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.